Hey, you made it. Welcome into Friday, everybody. Hope you're doing well. It's Sports Talk. Scott Beatty here, the editor of the News Gazette sports page and IlliniHQ.com is Matt Daniels, who's getting things configured on his headphones, so he'll be with us in a moment. Matt, I've had a poopy day, and I don't mean a bad day. I have young children. I mean literally.
I was going to say where you're going with that. That's the first thing that popped into my head when you said poopy day, and I can relate as well.
Yeah, let's just say I wore the right colored pants. But anyway.
All right. It's a little too much information, Scott.
Welcome in, everybody. We have Illinois football tomorrow. It's an 11 a.m. kickoff, 9:30 game day here on DWS. So we will dive into that a little bit. Chris Carlin is the Rutgers play-by-play voice. We will talk with him. Hope to hear from Bob Osmussen, who is running all over the place right now, but he intends to be here. Also, a check of what's happening with high school football tonight. Anthony Zillis will give us a pregame report from Bloomington Normal. Danville and Normal is a big game tonight, among others, on the scoreboard.
Yeah, he'll be out there. Danville at 6-1 plays at Normal Community at 7-0. It's kind of one of the bigger games in our coverage area this week, and Anthony will be there to provide a full recap in Saturday's News Gazette, and then head to newsgazette.com Saturday morning for a Game of the Week highlights video that he'll produce as well.
Some of the things going on today, Illinois volleyball tonight. They take on Ohio State. It's an 8 p.m. first serve, a little bit later due to the TV time, but you can hear it here on DWS if you are not going. Then they have Maryland tomorrow night at Huff Hall before they're back on the road for their next set of matches. One of the big news stories of the day, sports stories of the day, is the University of North Carolina has avoided major penalties. Avoided? Not been given major penalties?
Yeah.
After an NCAA infractions committee panel, quote, could not conclude that there were academic violations in the multi-year case focused on irregular courses. In a report released today, the panel said it found only two violations out of five charges the school originally faced, a failure to cooperate charge against two people tied to the problem courses in the formerly named African and Afro-American Studies Department. North Carolina also faced an improper benefits charge tied to athlete access to the problem courses and lack of institutional control. That's it. That's all they get. And I think the only people in the world that think this was a fair ruling are the NCAA and probably some administrators and coaches at the University of North Carolina. But in fact, it appears they actually didn't break any NCAA rules, which is also mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's just goes to show you how little control the NCAA has, or how much say they have in situations like this. And it's kind of laughable too that North Carolina can commit academic fraud for the number of years that they did and not be handed a more severe punishment by the NCAA. And the NCAA has had its critics before today, and I think the critics are just going to lampoon more on what the NCAA isn't able to do. It's just kind of a joke right now, and I know there's some Illinois fans hoping that they would come down hard on North Carolina with the 2005 national title game and the off chance that Illinois would somehow end up with that title or be vacated by North Carolina, and that's not going to happen. That wasn't going to happen. Illinois wasn't going to become the national champion.
No, that would never happen.
Of 05, but any chance of that title being vacated by North Carolina looks pretty bleak now, and it just kind of begs the question, what is the NCAA's role then? It is in terms of enforcing policies and rules like that on its member schools.
You may think this may be the technical ruling that may be correct in a technical sense, but everybody can see that North Carolina was cheating. They said they couldn't prove that it was an athletes only class, and that was part of it. If it was an athletes only type classes, that would have made a difference.
It's one of those situations that just kind of leaves you speechless too, just with the inability of the NCAA to hand down more severe punishments for North Carolina. And I'm sure this is a scenario that played out that's better than any that North Carolina coaches, administrators, fans could have hoped for, because they basically come off scot-free in this whole scandal. So it's that's why the college basketball corruption scandal is so much bigger, because the FBI's got its teeth sunk into it. And you have to wonder, too, when all that's said and done, what the NCAA is going to do, if anything. It's almost to the point is, why does the NCAA have an enforcement staff then if they're not going to enforce blatant cheating that hundreds and hundreds of athletes for multiple years were involved with.
It doesn't make any sense. The chief hearing officer for the infractions panel was Southeast Conference Commissioner Greg Sankey. Remember, North Carolina is in the ACC, not the SEC. But he said that the panel could not use those strong possibilities to determine whether violations occurred. North Carolina avoided major penalties when the panel couldn't conclude academic violations took place. Sankey says what happened was troubling. He says the panel applied the membership's bylaws to the facts and couldn't conclude violations. That's reality. I think the thing that North Carolina should do is some sort of self-imposed. That would be the noble thing to do, but I don't think they will do that. And now this just raises all the levels of cynicism. If this somebody had said if this was UNC Wilmington, they would have thrown the book at them.
It kind of begs the question too: is what's going on across the country? What's the next big scandal that might happen where the NCAA just doesn't do anything?
Yeah. Okay, on to happier things. The Cubs. The Cubs, that's a happy thing for many Cubs fans who stayed up late last night to see the Cubs beat the Washington Nationals in the decisive Game 5. For a while, it looked like it was an attempt by both teams to lose.
For a while, it didn't look like the game was ever going to end.
It was like 4-hour and 33-minute affair last night.
A 9-inning, 4-hour and 33-minute affair.
And now you as a sports editor will have the pleasure of the Cubs going to the West Coast, where the games start even later.
Actually, it's not too bad so far. The first two game times have been announced for the NLCS. First pitch tomorrow night at 7 o'clock Central Time out at Dodger Stadium, and then 6:30 p.m. on Sunday out in L.A. again Central Time, and then after that, it's all to be determined right now. I'll have to wait and see what happens in the ALCS. I know there's a few days next week where both series are playing on the same day. So I'm sure the MLB will determine what series has the potential for higher ratings, and then that'll be slotted into the prime time slot there. But it's not too bad.
MLB has got to be loving it because they have the four biggest markets in the U.S. are the final four teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. And you got the Astros and their kind of inspiring story with what they had to deal with in their city with Hurricane Harvey, and the Yankees are back in the ALCS, and then obviously you got a rematch of last year's NLCS with the Cubs and Dodgers. So it's almost a dream, like you said, for MLB in terms of their high market teams.
Cubs flight out to L.A. had to make a diversion.
They're not there yet, are they?
They've arrived now. Okay. They had to make a diversion to New Mexico on the way due to a player's family member having a medical issue. I don't know what medical issue that could be on a long flight with a lot of partying and carousing going on, but whoever it is, hope they are okay. You know what?
I don't think the Cubs are going to go out in L.A. tonight, Scott.
You wouldn't. Am I the only one that watches their team celebrate and carouse and party? And Theo Epstein made a comment about we were working on making plans for the rotation before the heavy drinking starts. Am I the only one that goes, you guys have a game in 36 hours? Can you just like cut back here?
John Lester looked like he spent a night out on Green Street last night in terms of some of the interviews I saw middle of the celebration and things like that. But yeah, it'll be interesting. And it's going to be very interesting too, just to determine who, like you mentioned, who's going to pitch in game one. I know John Lackey's name's been bandied about. And
I think it's going to be Lackey or Quintana. Quintana only threw like a dozen pitches last night, so
he was one of about 15 Cubs pitchers, it felt like, that Joe Maddon trotted out there on the eventual clincher. But, I mean, look at the Nationals' perspective, too. I mean, they've had a number of heartbreaking series losses here in the last decade, and last night just added to their misery as well.
Illinois basketball recruiting news. Io DeSumo is on campus. He tweeted that he arrived just a few minutes ago for his official visit here to Illinois, and it's down to here in Wake Forest for the highly coveted prospect who is a preseason favorite for Mr. Basketball in the state of Illinois. So a lot of selling to do this weekend for Brad Underwood and company, and Illini fans are holding their breath that Io will choose Illinois.
Yeah, don't know when he might make his decision at all, but obviously the early signing period starts November 8th and runs for a week, and then if you don't sign by November 15th, then it's you have to wait until the spring, and it looks like he'll have a decision made in the next month or so. I can't imagine him wanting to drag this out throughout his high school season and then eventually sign next April at all, but he's the state's top prospect. Brad Underwood and his staff, I'm sure, are going to sell their vision that they have for him and kind of be the floor leader, the playmaker. He's a bigger point guard, and he plays for the top 3A program in the state the last couple of years in Morgan Park, and can pretty much do it all. He averaged almost a triple-double last year for Morgan Park, and had a solid circuit on the AAU in the spring and in the summer. So this is arguably the most publicized, most pressure-packed recruiting weekend for Brad Underwood since he's arrived at Illinois.
So if you see Io on campus, make sure you smile and welcome him here.
There you go. He'll be at the football game, I'm sure, tomorrow as well, at least for the first half, and see everything that the campus has to offer.
We'll turn our attention to Illinois football. Tomorrow morning, they take on Rutgers on Foundation Weekend. We talk with Chris Carlin from Rutgers Play-by-Play, get his perspective on this game, that and more after this.
And then they're two back, and then they're what we call tank personnel with two tight ends, two backs, one receiver on the field. They do a nice job of mixing all of that to keep you off balance. But they want to run the football, and you know, for us each week, it's a huge emphasis on stopping the run on first and second down, and getting the offense into more favorable positions for us. So you know, they have the potential to move the ball pretty well, and you know, I know they've played a couple different quarterbacks, but their running attack has been the most consistent thing for them so far this season.
Illini defensive coordinator Hardy Nickerson with a bit on the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, who are the Illini opponent tomorrow. Joining us on the phone now, Chris Carlin, play-by-play voice for the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. Chris, you from your days as an intern with Mike and the Mad Dog Show to being with Don Imus in the mornings out in New York, doing TV work in New York. Now you're on the radio in Philadelphia as well, but finally you'll get exposure here in a market like Champaign. Welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure, and it's been a lifelong dream. No, actually, I love the trip every time we've been there. We've been there a couple times for basketball. Mm-hmm. A bunch of times. So I love coming out there and looking forward to it and getting on the plane here in a little bit.
You're not doing basketball, though, anymore, are you?
I am not. I gave it up this past year because I took the job doing this radio show in Philadelphia every day. So we have Jerry Recco, who's doing that now, but I still love doing the football and I still love being around Rutgers as much as I can.
Well, I want to get into the Scarlet Knights here in a moment, but coming up on a legendary show like Mike and the Mad Dog, you must have some stories, maybe some that you can't tell on the air, but you must have some stories from your career.
Yeah, I mean, it was a blast. I got to produce the show for 7 years, and, you know, I grew up, not even grew up, just, you know, out of college and stuff, listening to the show, and to get the chance to work on it was ridiculous. But I think the thing that I always get asked about the most is, you know, is that how those guys really were? And it was. And just a case in point, just quick story. We were in Indianapolis one time for a Knicks-Pacers series, and I walked into a hotel room. Two of them were sitting there watching The Horse Whisperer, the movie. And they, yeah.
Robert Redford, right?
Exactly, and Kristen Scott Thomas. And I started to, you know, tell them about one of the rooms being ready, and they just give me a big shh. And there was some dramatic scene where Redford is breaking up with Kristen Scott Thomas. And Dog turns to Mike at the end of it and goes, "Mike, yeah, I had to break up with that woman. She is absolutely lost right now." And Mike turns back to him and says, "Absolutely, right move." It was like they were talking about Game 6 of Knicks Pacers. So, yes.
Beautiful.
That's exactly what they were like.
Hey, Chris, this is Matt Daniels with the News Gazette, and safe travels to Champaign, and hope you enjoy your time here tomorrow at all. But what can Illinois fans just kind of expect out of this Rutgers football team that'll be at Memorial Stadium tomorrow?
You know, it's a team that has improved from a year ago. You know, you look at what happened against Ohio State, and you wouldn't necessarily see it in the score, but that's Ohio State. They played exceptionally well in the opener against Washington. We're not getting moved around at all, and you know, Washington's top 5-6 team right now. And then, you know, and against Eastern Michigan, just really, I don't know if they just kind of believe the clippings a little bit about how well they played, even though they lost against Washington, and they got away from them, and it was a lesson to learn. So you know, talent-wise, it's better. It's younger. It's very similar to what Illinois is going through right now, in that you're playing a lot of the younger guys, and you're trying to get a feel for, you know, what's going to be part of your future. And I think that's, you know, that's a good thing. As I'm sure Lovie has talked about quite a bit, it is very much a process that's going to take a few years and several recruiting classes to really get it going to build it back up to where it was last decade, you know, right before they came into the Big Ten.
If folks have buy-in, are fans buying into what Chris Ash is bringing and what Jerry Kill is doing offensively?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of fans understand what the situation was when Chris got here, and they've seen some steady improvement. I think Jerry Kill's had a very positive influence on the offense. They just have to be more productive, you know, and that doesn't have much to do with the coordinator right now. I think they're, you know, they're on cue with what they would like to do. It's just, you know, being able to execute it, having the right personnel to be able to do that, and guys just developing. It's not even the right personnel. It's just guys developing, and that's what it's going to take for a while. You know, you could see a lot of the young talent, but you see flashes of it, and it takes time to see it consistently.
We're talking with Chris Carlin. He's a Rutgers play-by-play voice. You find him on Twitter, at Chris Carlin.
Chris, just in terms of this game, a lot of Illinois fans are looking at it as kind of a must-win for the Illini based on the rest of the schedule and how young a team they are. Is Rutgers kind of viewing this game kind of the same way, especially playing in the loaded Big Ten East?
Well, I think so. I mean, listen, if you want to make some progress and get into the win column some more. I think we can all agree it's a pretty evenly matched game in a lot of ways, and I think that, you know, they view it the same way. Anybody you play in the conference, it's going to be hard to find a way to win. And this is two programs that are in same situations, and I think that, you know, they both look at it that way. Absolutely,
Chris. The offensive style of Jerry Kill, he's a ball control guy, likes to run between the tackles a lot. How effective has Rutgers been with that?
Not as effective as they would like. They've had flashes of effectiveness. Gus Edwards is a graduate transfer that came in from Miami, and he has been, I would say, the most consistent. Robert Martin's a guy that has played a lot of football for Rutgers and has played well. He and Gus have gotten the lion's share of the carries with Raheem Blackshear, who's a true freshman. But they haven't, you know, I don't think they've executed well enough in the run game. They want to be more consistent in that. And when you can't do that, you know, it becomes that much more difficult to throw the football. You've got young guys at the wide receiver position. You're missing your most dangerous weapon the last two games. He's back tomorrow in Janarian Grant. So, and, you know, you've got quarterbacks that are still trying to find the best ways to be productive right now. So I think that ultimately you're right. They want to run the ball first. They've been effective in spots. They just don't feel like they've been consistent enough with it.
What are the folks in Piscataway and supporters of Rutgers athletics? How are they dealing with Rutgers being in the Big Ten? Does it feel like they should be in the Big Ten after, you know, a few years of being in the league so far?
You know, listen, I think it coincided with a difficult time with the program in terms of the talent level and what went on. You know, they had unfortunate circumstances for, you know, a good year, and as far as the talent level, they're still kind of paying for that, too. I think fans are thrilled to be in the Big Ten and understand that in a couple of years, financially, it's really going to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to get to that level of being able to compete year in and year out, and that takes time. It's the ugliest word, right? I've always felt like when it comes to sports, patience should be a four-letter word. You know, it really should be.
Exactly.
And there are a lot of fans it is. But here's what I would point. Here's what I point to when Rutgers fans talk about it. Understand, you know, when Greg Schiano came here in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very similar situation in that you had a talent level that had to be increased. And, yeah, you were in the Big East, but you were in the Big East with teams like Miami and Virginia Tech then. And they were at a high level. You're going into the Big Ten now, and it's the same kind of thing. You have to replenish that talent and really hit the recruiting trail hard as you can, and make that really start to turn into something. And that's the way it gets year in and year out. And it is staggering how quickly it can fall off if you have a couple of years that go bad on you in recruiting.
How do fans take it? How do you look at it as a New York and Philly guy now? You know, when Rutgers first and Maryland first joined, a lot of folks out here in the Midwest were like, this makes no sense from a geographic standpoint. But it sounds like from what you're saying, you know, Rutgers likes being in the Big Ten from the competition standpoint. But do fans sit there and go, what are we doing in this conference?
No, not really, because this is what people envisioned. You know, they went through a period of great expansion in the 2000s and got to a point where they were ranked third in the country in 2006.
Mm-hmm.
Expanded the stadium, you know, facilities improvements, all those kinds of things, so that when the opportunity was going to present itself in a conference like the Big Ten, they were going to be positioned properly for it. Fans wanted this forever, and I think that they're just still, you know, like I said, it kind of coincided with a bad time in recruiting for football and basketball. Basketball's starting to bounce back a little bit, and they're feeling better about that. I think you're going to see, though, you know, people starting to really understand where you were coming from and how much it takes to get there when you're talking about a conference with the tradition that the Big Ten has.
Speaking of basketball, do you like that Big Ten Media Days will be in New York City? Do you like the Big Ten tournament going to Madison Square Garden and a week earlier than it traditionally is?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I the Big East tournament at the Garden, when we played in that for so many years, it had an incredible atmosphere. You know, I think Big Ten fans, if they come to New York, we'll get a feel for what that's about. It is different because it is a year earlier or a week earlier. And, you know, I'm sure a lot of fans aren't thrilled about that. But at the same time, I think if you come and are able to experience what it's like, it's a different I know people hate to hear this, but it's a different level in a lot of ways because it just has an electricity to the building and to the city that will just be different for Big Ten fans to experience. I think it's well worth making the trip if they can, because it'll be different, it'll be fun. And I think, like, you know, listen, it was Washington last year, and it's nothing against Washington. I think that's, you know, there's not a Big Ten tradition really in Washington, and there's not a Big Ten tradition in New York, but there's a big-time basketball tradition in New York, especially at Madison Square Garden.
We're with Chris Carlin, the Rutgers play-by-play voice, for a moment longer.
Just a basketball question real quick, Chris, before we let you go. But what is the outlook for the Scarlet Knights on the hardwood this year, about a month before the season gets going?
Yeah, Steve Peichel has got it going in recruiting. You know, I think they're looking at steady improvement. We certainly saw it in year one for him, and I think you're going to see even more this year. They've got an influx of talent. It's younger talent, but at the same time, I think Steve has really shown the ability to get the most out of his players, and he's been terrific on the recruiting trail. So, you know, I think there's a chance that they could be an NIT team this year, and I think that would be a major step in the right direction for them.
Chris, we really appreciate a bit of your time. I know you got to get on the plane to get over here. Hey, don't let this sprawling metropolis overwhelm you. Really, the folks are down to earth and friendly here.
Well, you know what I'm bummed out about is I'm missing out, and I believe it's still there. You guys can tell me. Alexander's Steakhouse was my spot.
It's still here.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting in there too late tonight to go. So that's, and with it being an 11 a.m. game tomorrow, I'm going to miss out on my trip. I love throwing the steak on the grill in the middle of that place. You smell like charred meat for 4 days. Tremendous.
Papa Del's Pizza, if you get a chance to deep dish pizza here in Champaign.
See, I can't.
Okay.
You can't tell a guy from the Northeast.
That's true. That's very true. None taken.
I would not tell you to come here. I would not tell you to come here and get barbecue.
There you go. Fair enough. Good point, Chris. Good stuff.
Here, guys.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys.
That's Chris Carling. You know, you just take a rolling pin and make the deep dish a lot like.
There you go. It's good, though.
I assume you'll be getting the check for that paid endorsement there.
No. No, I won't.
All right, more on this game tomorrow between Illinois and Rutgers. Also, some high school football to look at with Anthony Zillis. We have more on Sports Talk ahead. Yeah, all right. Chris Carlin, he was entertaining. I can see why he's on the radio.
Hey, well, great stories. I like the Robert Redford, Horse Whisperer, Mike and the Mad Dog. That was good. That was a good anecdote.
I actually remember being dragged to that movie.
I've never seen it, thankfully.
All right, we are on a Friday, so that means high school football tonight. Anthony Zillis of the News Gazette Preps Beat is out in the midst of Central Illinois, out in Bloomington Normal Way, right, Anthony?
Yep, I'm still headed that way, but just about to the normal community high school to see Danville take on a pretty good team here.
Yeah, how big of a game is this for both teams?
Well, I think for normal community, it's you know, just keeping up their dominance. They you know, undefeated at this point. I think are on the verge of clinching a Big 12 title. For Danville, it's coming off of last week's win against Peoria. Really a nice win for them. Helped Peoria to 26 points. You know, prolific offense, even without Caron Taylor last week. It's just a kind of an opportunity to show once again that they're an elite team, which maybe some had questions about coming into the season.
Anthony, I know you haven't seen Danville yet this year, but what are you kind of anticipating? What are you kind of looking forward to out of seeing the Vikings tonight?
I mean, I think we all know about their, you know, their stars at the top, particularly Julian Pearl, their tight end and the defensive end also. Going to Illinois as an offensive tackle. I'm really looking forward to seeing their quarterback, Ernest Plummer. It's kind of interesting story with him that he hadn't played high school football. He's been a star baseball player and a nice basketball player for them, but hadn't played high school football before. And then all of a sudden this year, he's their starting quarterback and playing really well. He and Jerry Reed kind of lead that offense in terms of skill players. So that'll be pretty interesting to watch against the normal community defense. That's a really good defense.
Some of the other key games that you see tonight, Anthony?
There's a couple interesting ones. Not quite the like last week. We had a couple kind of pretty huge ones. But this week, Jenna Oriana, 6-1 this year. Once again, having a really nice year playing Decatur LSA, who's also 6-1. Monticello playing Prairie Central. Prairie Central has shown that they're a good team. They almost beat Unity earlier this year, and Unity beat Monticello. So should be an interesting test for both teams to see what kind of level both Prairie Central's on, and if Monticello kind of continues their dominance after kind of stumbling against Unity a little bit. Yeah, a couple more interesting ones. Lincoln playing Muhammad Seymour. Muhammad Seymour looking for their fifth win, and that'll be it'll be really tight for them to get into the playoffs this year. So winning this one would be huge. Lincoln is 3-4 right now, so this is a big opportunity for them to gain playoff eligibility.
Yeah, 5 is playoff eligible. 6 gets you in, right?
Yeah, correct. And next Saturday night is all the playoff pairings. That'll start, I believe, at 7 or 8 next Saturday night for all 8 classes. But kind of shifting gears, Anthony, to another high school sport, boys soccer. St. Thomas More right now is up on Judah Christian 6-0 in the regional final over there. I know you've seen the Sabres a few times this year. And where do you see their potential as possibly making a steep state run? They haven't lost in more than a month, and I know Uni High is a possibility next week too, and their sectional over at the UI Turf Fields.
Right. I could see St. Thomas More making a really nice, really deep run, a state run. But I think their biggest stumbling block would be Uni High, who they tied earlier this year. It's been a rivalry over the years. Uni High knocked them out 2 years ago when St. Thomas More had a really nice team, and they said they felt like that was kind of another one that was sort of kind of the year, but Uni High was just even more equipped to have that that state run that year. So it'll be kind of fascinating to see if St. Thomas More can make that kind of run and beat I think Bloomington Central Catholic. They should meet in the sectional semifinals. And Uni would have to play St. Teresa, two very good teams. So it'll be really fun to see a Uni High St. Thomas War rematch in the sectional final.
Anthony, we appreciate you checking in. Enjoy your night, and we'll look for your wrap and your, I assume you have a game highlights video you'll put together too, right?
You better.
Yep, absolutely. Yep, late tonight. Very late tonight or early tomorrow morning, depending on how you look at it.
All right, write fast, Anthony, tonight.
I'll try.
All right, thanks, Anthony.
We love sports. Thanks to Anthony Zillis there, headed out to Bloomington Normal. More Illinois football talk, and who knows what else. We'll see if we can get Bob Osmussen to show up. He may just be lost at this point.
No, I think he's working.
I don't know. You only are working if you're here.
One of the hardest workers I know.
This is work here. We'll see you in a moment.
It's turning into another disappointing season for the Fighting Illini football program. Looking back at last week's 45-16 loss at Iowa that dropped Illinois to 2-3 on the year, head coach Lovie Smith tried to stay upbeat, saying the many personnel changes his team made before that game were a positive.
All the changes we've made, let's talk about them. I mean, we felt like we had to. The type of play we're getting, our injuries. So we did lock in, and we were pleased with how they played.
While Nick Allegretti excelled in moving from center to guard on the offensive line for the Iowa game, there's one glaring issue for Illini football, the quarterback position. Both Chase Crouch and Jeff George Jr. have not gotten the job done. Crouch struggled as the starter before being benched for the Iowa game, and he actually saw time at tight end in that contest. Unfortunately, George Jr. didn't fare any better in the starting role as he committed 4 turnovers in the Iowa loss. While Smith is playing lots of young players and hoping they get better, it will all be for naught if he doesn't develop a quarterback. Maybe Jeff George Jr. will be that guy, or maybe he won't be. But one thing is certain, if Smith doesn't find a solid quarterback, his tenure in Champaign won't be a successful one. With another installment of the Gotch Files, I'm Jason Gotch.
5:53 on Sports Talk, taking you to the top of the hour. Scott Beatty and Matt Daniels here. Illinois hosting Rutgers tomorrow. 11 a.m. is kickoff. Everything gets going at 8 with Saturday Sports Talk with Michael and Lauren tomorrow morning. We've got game day coverage at 9:30. Illinois coaching staff said they were pretty pleased with how the offensive line played last week. Despite the big lopsided loss, it was the most productive the offense had been. Doug Kramer, back as center for the Illini, talked about the play.
We played hard. You know, we battled, which was really good. You know, we were moving the ball well. We ran the ball well. Obviously, there's things that we can work on. There's always things that we can try to improve, but... You know, I thought we were moving the ball well throughout the game. We did some nice things in pass pro. We were giving Jeff some time. You know, it really just comes down to finishing in the red zone.
Kramer's talked about how Nick Allegretti, who has now been able to shift over to the guard spot, and his predecessor at center, Joe Spencer, have helped him.
It's him and Joe Spencer all of last year. You know, they taught me communication. You know, I have to get up there. I have to set where our offense is going to go on that certain play. But yeah, I think communication is the biggest thing that they taught me, just being loud out there, you know, making sure everyone's on the same page.
All right, we found Bob Osmussen somewhere on the streets of Champaign-Urbana. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, guys, I may have to jump off quickly because I'm waiting for the coaching staff right now.
Oh,
From Rutgers. Yeah, I'm waiting for them. But if I jump off, I apologize ahead of time. But yeah, they're going to be here in a second. They just landed. And so they're going to play tomorrow. I'm not forfeited. You're happy to know. They're going to play. They made the trip. Yeah, it sounds like they had a great flight because they're here. That's good. They're staying at Hawthorne Suites where everybody stays. So having a great time.
All right. So then give us your 30-second summation and prediction on this game.
Okay. I think Illinois will play better than last week. Better than the second half last week. I think Illinois will win a close game. In the paper, I put 33-30 just to replicate the 2005 game with the great Tim Breska comeback, which I wrote about for tomorrow. So there you go. 33-30 Illinois. Close game.
All right, Bob. Go bother the Rutgers coaching staff.
Yeah, I will. That'd be great. Thanks, guys.
Hey, Bob.
Sorry it took so long. See ya.
That's all right. Bob Osmussen sounding as hurried as I've ever seen him be. But you said you're right. He's a hard worker.
No, he is. He's amped up for tomorrow's game. And like you said, he's got to talk to Tim Bracek earlier this week, former Illinois quarterback who guaranteed a win when Illinois last hosted Rutgers in 2005, back when Rutgers was in the Big East and right before Ron Zook's first game in charge of the Illini. And Illinois pulled off a 33-30 overtime win. And Bob likes to do that with his score predictions. He likes to go to the past and see what has happened before in series history. So he's got Illinois winning. He's 4-1 on the year in his picks so far. I believe the only game he missed was the Illinois-Nebraska one, where he had Illinois beating the Cornhuskers. But, yeah, we got two full pages previewing tomorrow's game and Saturday's News Gazette.
How about Garrick McGee, Illini offensive coordinator? Obviously, we know Jeff George needs to cut down on those interceptions, but McGee wants to see a little bit more out of his receivers as well.
We need to do a really good job this week of, you know, getting our kids to challenge the ball down the field. I thought Malik had three or four times where he was one-on-one deep down the field, and Jeff gave him an opportunity at the ball. So we need to challenge him a little more to go up and, you know, make a more competitive challenge for the ball. I think Dom had one on their sideline also that I thought he gave him a chance at the ball. We just got to go up and challenge it.
And as for those interceptions from Jeff George?
You know, I think that all three are correctable. He was going, the two of them, he was going to the right spot on the field with the ball. Just didn't deliver the ball accurate enough. And then the one at the end was a bad decision. He made his mind up before he got the ball.
Hopefully he can cut those down. You know, as games go, I don't want to call this must-win, but your fan base will not tolerate a loss to Rutgers here. And that's no disrespect to them, but they won't.
Yeah, it kind of has the feel to what it was like the last couple times Purdue has come into Memorial Stadium, where Illinois goes into that game. They've had some struggles in the early part of the season and go into that game expecting a win, and they've come out with a loss, and that's kind of derailed their season at times. And yeah, you think this has to be kind of I wrote a little blurb about it in today's paper. It's almost like the Super Bowl for both programs, just because you look at the rest of Illinois' schedule, and if they don't beat the Scarlet Knights, who are 1-4 and haven't beaten an FBS opponent this year, they have a 16-game Big Ten losing streak dating back to 2015. If you don't beat Rutgers now, I don't know who Illinois might beat the rest of the year. Minnesota's struggled so far in Big Ten play, and they're 3-2 on the year, 0-2 in the Big Ten. They host Michigan State tomorrow night, probably looking at another loss for PJ Fleck's team. And then if Illinois can beat Rutgers and take some momentum with them into Minneapolis, that might be a game a week from now we're talking about, with Illinois maybe having a chance to go up to TCF Bank Stadium and get a road win. But if they don't win tomorrow, then I think everyone's focus just kind of shifts more towards start of basketball season and what Brad Underwood's program can accomplish.
Well, even with a win, the focus will shift there either way. But you win tomorrow, then I think that keeps the door open to maybe a 4-5 win season, which from my standpoint, from the whole start, all this would be success.
Yeah, I think what Illinois just needs to do tomorrow is they need to just continue and play a full game. You saw glimpses of it in the first half last week at Iowa. They just need to continue it over and play that way for all four quarters tomorrow.
Well, Matt, we made it here to Friday, so it's about quitting time here for you, right? I'm sure.
Yeah, just going back to the office for about 5 or 6 hours and work the rest of my Friday night away. All right. It's fun.
Hey, appreciate hanging out with you. Thanks for making it over here, and we'll do it again soon enough.
Sounds good, Scott. Thanks a lot.
Thanks to Chris Carlin, the Rutgers play-by-play voice, for joining us. Anthony Zillis and Bob Osmussen as well, producer, engineer tonight, Randy Offner. Thanks to you for listening. We wish you a great weekend. We're back at it tomorrow morning with Saturday Sports Talk at 8 o'clock. Lauren and Michael will bring you that, and then Illini Game Day at 9:30. It's Newstalk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, a News Gazette media station. It's 6 o'clock. Good night.